Hey everybody, this is Jeremy Essick, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 54. My name is Chris Bumeter.
I'm Shane Presley.
We are recording this evening here at the Funny Bone. Our guest this week is comedian Jeremy Essick, who thanks for coming and hanging with us.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Thanks for coming up here.
Letting us, record. Like, it kind of feels pretty official, we were saying, so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Up to snap a picture.
Super official. Yeah. We pulled two tables out of the audience, and...
Well, see, it's better than my basement that's filled with dog pee. Like, smells like dog pee and toys, so...
Yeah, I mean, this place smells more of cigarettes and broken dreams, so it's way better.
I guess it's got its... Each one's got its...
Yeah.
So thanks for coming and hanging out, and you guys got a show tonight?
Yeah. Yep.
You said if we go that long, we're going to not be talking about a whole lot of interesting stuff, so... So now, you're not originally from St. Louis, is that correct?
No. I moved here in 2004.
Gotcha.
2004. I had lived previously, I grew up in rural Ohio, and then I went to college in North Carolina, and then lived in Cincinnati and Minneapolis before I moved here.
Oh, gotcha. What brought you to St. Louis?
I had just kind of started doing the road or touring or however you want to use that phrase, and I came through here, and at that point they were booking like 8 or 10 clubs out of here, and Matt, the manager here, liked me, and he was, kind of like, hey, if you move here, we can give you X amount of work here, and then I can put you in all the other clubs. And I was like, well, I'm not really working a lot of places right now, so yeah.
Right,
and I mean, plus in Cincinnati, I was, drunkenly one night told my ex-girlfriend, she was living with a friend of hers, and they got kicked out, and I was living in a studio apartment, and I was drunk, and I was like, why don't you just move in with me? It'll be cheaper. And I mean, we were friends, but we had still dated previously, and so like 2 days later, she was like, is that cool? I think I will. And I was like, yeah. And then like a month into it, I was like, this is weird, like, because it was an efficiency I lived in.
Right.
So like, we shared a bed. Like, there was, no privacy, but we weren't dating. We were,
just hanging out.
Yeah, I was already looking to move somewhere, and then when he was like, work, I was like, well, I guess I'll move to St. Louis.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up here in 2004.
Dude, now do you kind of feel like it's home now, or do you still go back to it?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I don't know if really, like, as you kind of get older, if there's really a point of, like, it's kind of where you live. Like, I don't know if there's a home.
Yeah, I mean, I think, with especially as much travel as I do, there are certain cities that you do kind of, there's a, a better connection or whatever phrase you want to use. I go back to Ohio, my parents live an hour from Columbus, so if I'm in my hometown or if I'm in Columbus or even in Cincinnati where I lived for a while, that feels like home, but this also feels like home. I think after... Even parts of North Carolina kind of feel like home. I mean, I was there for 4 years, and you just, it's a home, I think, anymore. If you don't have your family around you, which I don't, home is just like, I know where that restaurant is.
Right, yeah, I have familiarity with how to get to here.
Like, I was telling someone when I was in New York, home, this probably feels the most like home because, I know where to go when people give me free beers.
Yeah.
I can call someone and have them hold certain records for me. Whereas, I was in New York, people were like, I don't know who you are. And no, I'm not going to do that. Oh, that's right. No. And so, I mean, that I think is a concept of home,
They don't say, get out of here, outside. You're like, I just need to know where McDonald's
outsider.
Is. That's all I need to know.
When I moved to the Old West?
Yeah. Well, it's some people are old school, I just talk like I'm from the Old West. And I don't know. Where in North Carolina did you?
I went to Wake Forest. It's in Winston-Salem.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. We used to live in Charlotte, kind of by Huntersville. So I'll just...
Sure.
Just curious. I have to ask,
Sure.
Anything I recognize. So North Carolina, you know where that McDonald's is? It's sweet. So how long, I don't like saying how long have you been doing comedy, because it's kind of a, people don't say, well, January 22nd, 1964 is when I first started telling jokes, but what?
That's definitely not my answer, because I wasn't born yet, hairline regardless, I'm not that old.
But when did you kind of start to perceive comedy as doing it professionally? And stuff
It wasn't intentional. Mm-hmm. It, I hated it. And I was in bands all through college, and then my one band broke up my senior year, and I was graduating, and so I didn't bother to form a new one, and a friend of mine signed me up for open mic in Dayton, Ohio, because I was moving to Cincinnati, and I was just like, I guess I'll do it, like, because I don't have, but I was, I mean, I still have the demos that I was, like, shopping around to try to find a band, like, you know, guitar parts and whatever I'd recorded on a six-track, and then this just kind of started snowballing, and it was like, I wasn't putting that much effort into finding a band, and then I started getting paid doing this, and then, like, you just kind of go one day, you just go, oh, this is, I guess, what I do.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I guess this is my job now. It was, like, totally unintentional.
Yeah. What kind of music did you guys play? Because I know, like, and this is for me, like, high school, senior year, my band quit, and I told my buddy, like, 2 months prior, I'm like, if this band breaks up, I'll go to college with you. And I had no plans of going to college. And he's like, lo and behold, our band broke up, and I went to Northwest Missouri State. And I had never been to Maryville. Like, it's up in Far Left Corner of Missouri.
I performed up there. I know where it is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's awesome campus, but on the way there, like, I remember coming from here. Once you get past Kansas City, there's about an hour and a half, you know, to Maryville, and you're like, there's nothing but farmland. I mean, you hit St. Joe, but you're like, what have I done? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so what kind of music were you guys
doing? I don't know that it was ever super defined. My first band was this weird amalgamum of, like, our drummer was really into metal, so he had, like, a double bass pedal.
Okay.
And, like, would play kind of that.
Yeah.
And our singer was, like, really into the Beatles. And, like, I came from, like, what at the time would have been called, like, underground or alternative or whatever, like the Replacements and Husker Du and stuff like that. So it was like, if you throw that into a blender and with musicians that don't really understand, you know, sequencing and how to put instruments together and how a song should actually sound, you just throw that in and go, well, this is how I know how to play. Like,
right.
I mean, I remember the first time my singer and I played together was at this party at my English teacher's house, and he wanted to play Hotel California. And I knew it, like, I knew the song, and I knew the chords.
Yeah.
And so he played the standard Eagles Hotel California, and I was playing 16th notes on my bass, which is, you know, boom, 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 like, that really fast. And, like, in retrospect, I'm like, oh, that was horrible.
Yeah.
So that was my high school band. And then my band, the band I was in the longest in college, I would say was probably more, like, power pop type stuff. But then we were doing what I thought were a lot of originals. Like, I would write songs, and our singer would write songs, and then I found out later that all of my, like, not all but one of my singer's songs were Oasis and Radiohead B-sides. Like, kind of like, they're just, like, rarer cuts.
Nobody
that I wasn't, well, I wasn't familiar. I didn't know, and we were playing, and my best friend listened to a bootleg that we had recorded at one of our shows, and we were, you know, in my car drinking and passing this around, parked and passing this. And I was playing, and he starts singing along with one of the songs. I go, what are you doing? And he goes, well, this is a Radiohead song. And I go, no, I mean, he likes Radiohead. Probably sounds like a Radiohead song.
Right.
He goes, sounds like, really? And then he did the next two verses, and I was like, oh, I need to have a talk with my singer.
Oasis will never go anywhere. Nobody's going to hear these.
Yeah, no one's
going
to be familiar.
We'll be fine.
Yeah. So that was that band.
Lo and behold, Oasis made a little bit bigger impact than anybody ever thought.
Yeah. Although, have you heard Noel Gallagher's newest album that came out this week?
No.
It's really good. Like, for what it is, and I don't mean to say that to demean it. I'm just saying that to say, like, it's not my favorite album I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But it's really good. I was listening to it the other day, and it, like, really I don't want to say surprised, because he's a good songwriter, but, like, you just hear it and you go, like, yeah, this really works. Like, this is a good piece of, like,
is that the BDI or what's
I forget what it's called. It's Noel Gallagher and the Somethings. I can't remember.
Maybe it's the other brother does the.
I'll say it wasn't the big issue. It's like Oasis could never stay together because the brothers just would.
Yeah, well,
just spontaneously fight.
Noel was the guitar player. You might maybe Liam was the singer. So maybe it's whatever his band.
I don't know. I'm not huge on Oasis. I mean, I'm familiar with them, but
sure.
I don't know all the. The facts.
No, I wasn't. I was never the biggest fan either, which is why my singer was able to get away with that. But that new Noel Gallagher album was really, really good, I thought.
You still keeping up on a lot of the new music and stuff? Because I know you, that was one of my favorite things. So you, when you used to do your show, your podcast, you would always throw the little recommendations. And besides, you still...
Yeah.
Keeping up with it.
Yeah, I mean, I probably listen to between 15 and 20. I try to listen to between like 15 and 20 new albums a week, even if I don't get through the whole thing. But like between the NPR first listens and what Spotify puts up and everything. I try to at least, because I don't know, like a lot of quote-unquote music sites, they're very, one, I don't like how they're written half the time, and two, it just seems like they've got like their favorite bands or labels or whatever, and they don't, there's a lot of stuff that's missed and a lot of stuff that they do like. I'm like, well, this is kind of, you know, garbage, or if not garbage, at least like, this sounds kind of like something else. So I've really tried to just, if I see something and it's like, this is new music, I'm like, all right, well then I want to give it a shot. So yeah, I try to stay up on it as much as possible.
Yeah, I do a lot of that too. Like you said, like just seems like a lot of places are kind of biased or whatever it is. They only promote certain things they like, and I kind of like going in just not knowing anything about stuff, just picking up a new album and listening to it, and with a fresh palette, and not having any kind of preconceived anybody telling me, oh, this is good, or you know, anything about them. I kind of like just going in open-minded, and maybe you find something really great. And
I mean, I'm kind of the same way. If I had the budget, which I don't, I think I would just go into the record store every week and buy the new release wall and then make up my mind. But unfortunately, I don't have that kind of budget.
I find myself, like, lately, because I used to really be into music, and I have a hard time, like, finding new music. But stuff I really start to, like, realize I enjoy is music from, like, television show soundtracks. Like, I remember Scrubs had, like, a great soundtrack. And I don't know what it is, if it's, like, connecting that emotion of the show to...
Yeah, I think if you give it, because that can kind of give you a twinge of the emotion or what, or at least how someone saw it. There's a lot of, actually this year, the three albums I'm most excited about so far are all women singers, which I think is, I don't know if that's interesting, but that's, I mean, I can't remember the last, like if you'd asked me like 5 years ago, it wasn't that I was opposed, but you know, it was a lot more male. Sure. And I don't know if that's the change in the business or the change in me or, you know, whatever. But, thinking about it, it's like, oh, the three albums that are coming out in the next 2 months that I'm super excited about are all women singers, which is whatever that is. Maybe it's because I've been single for as long as I have and I just miss a woman screaming at me.
I think there's kind of a refreshing feel to it, because like I know whether it's like if you sit and listen to one style of music or maybe it's just, you know, hearing male vocalists constantly, that when you jump to a different style, whether it's a different style of music or it's a woman singer, like you're kind of like, oh hey, this is not something that I'm familiar with, and like refreshing musically, and it's kind of like, let me check out more stuff, and you realize that there's all sorts of stuff out there that may just be why it's kind of nicer to
check out. One of the recommendations you turned me on to Bruiser Queen from your show.
Yeah.
And that's another female singer.
Mm-hmm.
But I love their stuff, and they've been on the show, and I've been supporting them since you.
Oh, cool.
So anyway, yeah. So
that's cool. Yeah, that was, I saw them, that was the second loser meeting we ever had, where Chris and I finally determined how we were going to do the show. Was the first time we met at this weird Mexican place, and the second time was that Bruiser Queen show I saw.
Nice.
So yeah.
Yeah, they're great. I really like what they're doing, and it seems like they got a good thing going. They're on the road a lot, and
it seems like things are going quite well for them, which is awesome.
So when you did the podcast, right? Kind of before. How long ago?
I stopped doing it. I don't know, a year and a half ago, maybe.
I'm just curious, cause, like, what it was like to kind of dive into it then, because like for us, when we've gotten it, I mean, I guess ours was about a little under a year, but it seems like podcasting's huge now, where even just a year or so it wasn't. Like, did you guys going into it have kind of an idea of what?
Well, there was no guys, it was me. I kind of knew, I knew a lot of people that did it. It was on the recommendation of a manager in LA that he was like, you should start a podcast. So I did. And it was fun. I mean, I went to journalism school, so like the interviewing and stuff, I always kind of enjoyed. I like kind of like drilling down on why someone's into whatever. Yeah. But it, you know, when you have 43 other things you're doing, and including, you know, insane travel a lot, it just became exhausting. And I mean, probably like you guys, you know, you don't want to put out a piece of garbage. Yeah. You know what I mean? And there were just times where I was like, all right, I could throw this out there, but this is really slapped together because I didn't have much time this week, and you know, and I was doing the interview and I wasn't even paying that close attention, and so it just got to a point where, and that's how, what I, you know, how I feel about a lot of stuff is like, I don't want to put garbage out, or at least a lot of garbage out there. You know what I mean? And that's what it became, just a time constraint thing for me, is why I stopped doing it. I just, you know, between every other project I have going on right now, that was the one that I was like, meh.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, you say if you're doing it on your own, like, I have Shane that I swear to God does probably 90% of the work, and I just sit here and talk and like edit a little bit. But like, yeah, I've tried and do my own podcast before, and I just can't do it because I'm like, either one, I am like too like self-conscious, like this sucks, like nobody's gonna listen to this, or I just, same thing, like laziness. I'm just like, ah, man, I could go do that, or I could go do something way more interesting that I know I'll enjoy. It's just a balancing act, but at the same time, like with this, luckily Shane's been like kicking my butt to stay in it. He does a lot of the work too.
I think for a lot of comedians, it seems like you know, most of the podcasts I listen to, there's a lot of comedy ones, and but it seems like a lot of comedians do it, and sort of allows them to write on the air.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
you're constantly working out ideas, and then what you do, you can take that and kind of form a, you know, something for your act, or just having content at least. And
it was definitely good for that. I mean, the on mine, you know, I would do about a 7 or 8 minute monologue before I got to the interview, and there was a lot of that where I would find, like, because I was just talking about my week or whatever, and then you like listen back to it and you go like, oh, that was, I found a joke in that. I wasn't even ever going to sit down and write on that, but then when I was talking about it, I was forced to, like, something funny came out of my mouth, and then so for that it was really good for The one joke I have about my dog came right from the podcast. It was just a story I was telling, and then Sean O'Brien, who's a comic, he was listening to it, and he was like, that thing about your dog, that should be a bit. And I was like, oh, I never even thought, like, you know. And then it did. It became one. So, yeah, it was definitely good for that.
Yeah. I know a lot of it's just your personality, but your podcast was Trivial Matters, and you would always have just a random subject for the week of – whether it's, let's say, By the Bell and 90210 or whatever, all kinds of random things. And but like, I like how that, you know, I guess it's, like I said, a reflection of your personality, where it's kind of morphed into what you're doing now with this loser show, which is also bringing in like trivia, and comedy and game show and.
Well, Loser was the origin of Loser was, and it was all kind of the same time I was doing the podcast, but it was a weird, so the whole way that started was, I was asked to be a judge in the RFT's comedy contest 2 years ago at Plush, which is no longer there, and Chris Ward was one of the other judges, and I had never met Chris, I didn't know Chris. And we were drinking on the RFT's tab, and we got really loaded, and then we went back to Chris's house. And, you know, we had like he had a tiny drum kit, and we started talking about video games, and we started talking about comic books. And so the next day I was flying out to San Francisco, and I couldn't sleep. And I was just like, I need to make a show with this guy. So like on the flight, I just was like, well, what did we talk about it last night? So I kind of wrote up, I mean, since we've met, I've looked at my original draft, and I was like, oh, we did that, but we didn't do that, you know, because, you know, Chris helped me develop it a lot. But. Then when I landed in San Francisco, I sent him a message on Facebook like, hey, do you want to do this show with me? And like, because I was so sleep deprived and hungover, I didn't even realize, like, you hung out with this guy for one night and you're proposing, like, we should do a game show. Yeah. Like, in retrospect, that's what a crazy person does.
Clinger.
Yeah. But, like, luckily it worked out. But, yeah, he's mentioned that before. Like, yeah, that was a little weird. I barely knew you. And you were like, you're sending me documents. Right, of, like, we need to do this.
Yeah, Skype invites. And you're just like, well, I'm not ready yet.
When I'm sleep deprived and either hungover or drunk, I tend to not recognize social cues.
Just get really inspired and just really friendly. Hey, it's cool.
There's a level. I wish there is a level with the sleep deprivation and the drinking that it can, like, there's, I don't know how many beers it is and how many hours of sleep I have to be missing, but there's this one weird, I always find myself in this void where I'm like, I'm super creative right now, but then it's also like you have that one more drink and you're like, I'm not creative at all right now. I'm cranky and I need to go to bed.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I hit that at about, like, I work till 1:30 in the morning at work, and it'll be like 9, 10 o'clock. I'm like, holy shit, I could do anything. I could create anything in the world. Right. I'm going to go home. I'm going to do this. I'm going to create this. I'm going to stay up all night. And I get home, like, I'm going to bed.
Right.
Screw this. Like, it's, if I could manifest my time to where, like, the moment I get the amount of creativity I do, I could just say, all right, guys, I'm going to leave for about 6 hours. I'll be back. But I feel like still that drive home of a half hour, I'd get home back. I'd rather just go to bed. But
well, that's no. I had that today. There was there's a bit I've been working on, and I had lunch with a friend of mine. And then I was walking home, and on the, like when I was leaving with her, like these ideas were kind of popping in my head, and I'm like, yeah, that's how that bit should go, and I'm going to sit down and write it. And then I got home, and it was just the walk home.
Yeah.
I walked in the door, and my dog was asleep on the bed, and I was like, yeah, it seems like a way that's, better idea. And I just took a nap.
There. Right, yeah.
speaking of sleep deprived, I used to work a lot, like 80 hours a week in construction, and one time I come home and I was just, you know, exhausted. And mm-hmm. I passed out, like, with my boots still on and everything. And I think my sheets and everything were in the laundry. So I ended up, passing out on my bed. And I got cold in the middle of the night. And I crawled between the box spring and the mattress to get warm. Because I was too tired to go get a blanket, so I was like, it sounded like a much better idea. And
were you with Stacy this time?
I don't know if we were. I don't think we were together. This is quite a while back.
Funny.
Yeah. So my brother was living with me, and I don't know. Alarm goes off, and you know, I'm like laying in my bed. And I hear the alarm going off, and I think it's in the wall. And I start punching the wall, trying to punch through the wall to get this clock out of the wall to turn it off. Like, and so my brother walks into the bedroom and sees me between the box spring and the mattress punching the wall, and this and the alarm clock's like, you know, right there or something, like right on the, you know, right next to the bed. And it was like, but he's like, "Are you all right?" And I'm like, you know, I was like, I was just so out of it, just so, you know, I was like, I just need to sleep.
That's funny, man.
So I think I slept for like, I don't know, 16 to something hours or yeah, whatever it was. And then like, it was like a Saturday morning, and he's kind of handy, man, kind of thing. He was cutting speaker boxes for his truck. He's out there on the porch, like with a saw, and he's like, you know, cutting all this wood. I get up and then, you know, next day, and he's like, "You slept through all that?" And I'm like, "Slept through what?" I'm like, so I was like, so then he tells me all that. And so, yeah, that was my little sleep deprived story.
Do you sleepwalk? Do either of you guys sleepwalk?
I don't
mine's
think
real bad.
Yeah, I don't think I sleepwalk. I do a lot of, like, I mean, I move a lot, but I'm like all over the bed and everything. And I used to, my dad tells me this story, but I used to like fall asleep, you know, head up here, and then like I would, like he said, I would rotate like a clock, like I would, he, you know, he'd kind of like as a kid, like, and he would come like check on me, and like I'd be flipped the other way and then like back, and you know, it's like moving all over the place like this. Ever since I was young, I've, I don't know, got weird sleep habits.
Yeah, mine, when I was eighth grade, maybe seventh grade, I walked out of my parents' house to the neighbor's house, rang their doorbell, and told my neighbor's mom that someone was robbing our house.
Oh my
God.
It
was in the middle of the night. And then, I mean, there's more minor instances, but then, like 4 years ago, I got up in the middle of the night, went out to my car, at least turned it on. I don't know if I drove it, but, and then walked back into the house, because the next day I woke up and I couldn't find my keys, and I was like really upset about it, because I was completely sober the night before, and I was like, this isn't like dumb drunk idiot, right, put your keys somewhere. And then I finally was like, well, maybe I dropped them getting out of the car. And then I walked out to the car and the car was running.
I get it from my dad, but not like, I've never driven my car or gotten my car or anything, but like my dad, I remember when we were little, came into our room and he was in his underwear and he turns the fan off and on. He's like, "You guys smell that? You guys smell the smoke?" And me and my brother are like, "We don't know what's going on right now." He's like, "Do you smell it?" And then he just left. We're like, "Okay." And now, like, when I don't really sleepwalk, but I'll do that thing where like I'll wake up and think something's happening, and like I'll think like the fan's falling in the ceiling, and like hop up real quick and try and turn it off. And then my wife's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "I just thought the fan was on." And I try and play it off, but she's like, "You're fucking sleeping." And I was like, "No," or like, I think she's falling off the bed. I don't know what it is, but my dad's the same way, and like he'll think people are coming in the house. My mom's like, "Sometimes I'm afraid to go to bed at night because I'm afraid he's going to try and kill me because he like thinks people are breaking in." But
yeah, after I walked out of the house, I was really nervous about what else I was capable of, right, doing in my sleep. And luckily, as far as I know, nothing you know, with the exception of maybe driving my car that one time that ever happened. So it tends to happen, and I don't know what kind of stress I had as an eighth grader, but I remember the time I tried to drive the car, I was super stressed out. It just tends to happen at times when I'm, like, really, really stressed out, and I think, yeah. you know, you go to sleep, and maybe you're, like, still factoring through things in your brain or whatever.
Suppressing whatever, yeah. That's nuts. I hope I don't ever do something too stupid. Like, my wife's mom lives with us now until she finds an apartment. Like, that's something, too. I'm afraid I'm just going to walk out and be like, oh, hey, Jen's mom, I'm just, all right, going back in here, and this is awkward. See you in the morning, but I don't know. So I'm always curious, like, when speaking with comedians, how you come up with your material. Like, is it something of, like, self kind of taking in your surroundings, or are you able to sit down and just kind of write, or
It's a little of all of it. Yeah. There's the point. I think the easier things to do are when something you take in, you know, when something happens and you just go, oh, that's weird. Well, I can just talk about that. And then you kind of bend it. I don't want to say bend it, but you figure out where to break it and throw your part of it in to make it funny. And I mean, those are the easier, but the harder ones are kind of what you're saying, just sitting and writing or like going through I might talk about it tonight, I don't really know, but the thing I wanted to work on today before I took the nap was just like, I've come to realize I don't ever want to do anything anymore. Like, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to leave my apartment, and it's not depression, and it's not anything else. It's just I've met all the people I want to meet. Yeah. Like, I don't know, there's nothing, I really have to weigh, like, is what I'm going to go do any better than any record I have in my apartment? And right. It generally isn't. And like then, and then so it spins like kind of like you know, even like I've been single for like a really long time now, like the longest of my life, and it's like, oh yeah, that's you, I don't meet anyone sitting on my couch. Right. Like that's not, you know. And so it's like what I kind of gave you is like this amorphous bigger idea
right.
that doesn't really have punchlines right now.
Yeah.
And so those are the harder ones where you have to like really sit down and go like, okay, that's just me talking. Yeah. Okay, that's a funny thing about this, you right. know? Because, I mean, there's a certain thing with charm on stage where if you're charming enough and you swear enough, honestly, you can fake just an idea that isn't really funny. But I think, I don't want to say all comics, I know when I've pulled that trick. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's, you got out of it on stage, but it wasn't funny what you said. You just kind of, you know, were paused in certain places.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I mean, that's the kind of, that's the harder, and sometimes the more satisfying, because when you get them, I think it's both, well, you know how hard you worked, and I think it's, those are bits that are more honest. I mean, I can tell you a story about something that happened, but it just happened, you know, and I mean, that doesn't mean it's not funny, but right. that also doesn't mean it might not necessarily mean anything in the world at large. It doesn't really, it's not, and this is going to come off super pretentious, but like if you consider art expressing something about yourself to the world at large, and you know, there's not a ton of art in just saying like, I saw this thing today and it was super funny. Like that's like, everybody sees things.
Right.
But like if you can express like, you know, like trying to get to the root of like, why don't I want to do anything anymore? Like, you know, why I used to never stay home, and now I never want to go anywhere, you know? And it's like, and maybe this is even a poor example that will never become a joke, but like, it's just like, those are the ones I think are more satisfying in the end if you can get them. And because you don't always, like the thing I'm talking about right now could die by the end of the week. I could try it 4 times this week and it doesn't happen. I just go, eh.
Yeah. Did you ever have any issues? Because I know like, I could think of something that was funny that happened to me, but if I was to get up to try and explain to somebody, it would not be funny because of like a big part of comedy is like delivering it and being able to tell a story, which I'm very poor at. Like I can't tell, but like have you been able to kind of express it or I guess speak in front of a crowd pretty well to tell a story and tell a joke? Because I don't know if that makes sense, but like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, I mean, there's always stuff though that you can, stories that you have that you think are funny that you realize like, well, that story's super long in the payoff isn't big enough to waste that much of the crowd's time telling right. that. Like the thing I'm going through with Delta Airlines right now, there are funny moments in it, but I don't really know. It's such a long involved story.
Yeah.
And I don't really know if I was to tell it on stage, if like, kind of like you said, if it would be worth their time because like, it's a decent story, but it's not funny all the way through. There's a lot of just like,
Right.
Oh, fuck them. That happened?
Important details.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, you learn how to do that. I mean, that's one of the skills in this. You kind of learn how to do that, and you learn to edit stuff to kind of get to the funny. But, I mean, there's still – I don't want to say – anything I'm saying is for me. There are no absolutes in this business. But, I mean, there are still stories that I'm like, man, that's a really funny story, and I've never gotten it to work on stage. Like, Sean I have this story about when I used to work at TGI Fridays, and that was back like when you had to wear flare and like wear goofy hats. And our Fridays let us wear visors as a goofy hat, and I would always wear one because it was just—I mean, you still look like a clown, but it's at least easier. I could just put it on backwards and it didn't get my face. And
right.
And then like one day they were like, visors aren't funny anymore. You can't work tomorrow if you don't wear a funnier hat than. So I come in the next day because I didn't care. And the visor on, and they're like, nope, we said you can't go on the floor. And like I needed to pay rent.
Yeah.
And so I ran through the kitchen and I grabbed a funnel and I tied a string around it and put the funnel on my head, and I just went to my GM's office and I go, hey, I'm the Tin Man now. Is this funny enough? And like, I think that's a good story. It never works on stage. I've never gotten it to work on stage once.
Huh.
It just, and I don't know what it is, but like, that's one of those things like, I think it's a funny story, but it just dies.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, that's the other thing too. As you do this longer and you develop a set or whatever, it's like you start realizing, like, that story might be funny, but that can't follow all the other stuff I did. You know what I mean? It sticks out as a sore thumb of, like, that's amusing, as opposed to, like, where you have bits where the punchlines actually hit. And, you know, depending on where you throw it into a set, like, the crowd's like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, that was amusing, I guess, you know. So, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is you start learning, like, even if something's funny, maybe it's not as funny as everything else you have, and it just kind of, you're like, I either need to work on that more or I need to give up that dream.
Yeah.
I was thinking when you were, you talked about, you know, cursing enough in it and stuff, and there's, I saw Chris D'Elia, he had a thing on his Facebook page, a picture of him, like, doing some real animated thing on stage, and he's like, you know, me working on a really well-written joke, and like, I just... It made me laugh because, like, you know, that's the whole thing. Like, if it's not written well enough, you can always...
Oh, yeah, you can sell it. Anything you can, with physicality. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Or curse words or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you can make it work.
And yeah, shiny keys.
Yeah. So I just thought that was funny that he calls himself out on, you know, on his own page. And but, yeah.
Let's got to be honest.
Right, yeah.
So who are some of the comedians that you... You know, that you really enjoy now or before?
Well, before, the answer was none.
None.
I mean, I got into this. I didn't like comedy. I saw it on TV. My parents, you know, I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, and my parents would watch Evening at the Improv, you know, when it was all over TV. And I just remember going, like, these guys all are talking about the same garbage, and it's this looks stupid. And so the first time I ever walked into a comedy club was that open mic my friend signed me up for. Mm. And I never assumed I would walk into a comedy club again, let alone, you know, live in them, basically. And so, you know, I thought Norm MacDonald was super funny before I got into it, but that wasn't just a stand-up. I just, like, thought he just, anytime he was on SNL or that sitcom he had, because it just seems so different than everything else.
Yeah.
You know, like, his sense of humor was so separate. You know, now to be honest with you, it's kind of hard to say because because I know so many people. It's like, and then I know a lot of people that I really like as humans, and then I know like people that I don't like at all.
Yeah.
And then you go like, well, how much of that influences how much I like them as a comic?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it just becomes weird when. So I guess, I don't know, never having been a fan, I mean, there are people that make... the funniest thing that happened at last night's show wasn't the show, to me.
Yeah.
It was Justin, who's opening, tells this story about this guy I went to high school with, and he's in the NFL now, and the guy was a dick, and the guy's like a linebacker for some team, I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And you know, he finishes the bit well, and then one of the lines is like, yeah, so... don't draft blah-bitty-blah on your fantasy team. That was like the final line. And then this guy sitting right here goes... you can't. He's a defensive player.
Oh.
And that's the hardest I laughed all night.
Right,
it was the hardest,
yes.
You know, and it had nothing to do with the stage.
Yeah.
I, like, that's the kind of stuff that I find funny is those, like, weird logic holes.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Just didn't even think
so,
of
it. Yeah, I mean...
damn it.
Yeah. So, I'm not... I don't watch comedy. The only comedy I watch is when I'm on the show.
Right.
So, I don't even know... like, there's so many of the comics coming up or whatever, and maybe it was always like this because I was so out of it that, like... you know, I'll work with someone and they're like, oh my God, you know blah blah blah. And I'm like, how do you? I met him last week. How do you know who he is? He's, you know, he's been doing blah blah thing and thing. I don't know. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I'm completely removed from the world of it. I mean, besides the fact that I work in it and a lot of my friends work in it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't watch comedy. I've just never been able to.
Yeah.
I clean for, you know, it's like for my job, like I don't want to go home and clean.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's funny you said it. Like that was, and I mean, it's not even this, but it's like one of the first bits I ever wrote and it didn't work, but it was like, you know, your average working person, whatever they do, right? Like a lot of them come home at the end of the day and they want a beer or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the first jokes I wrote. It's terrible. But I go, like, what about the guy whose job is a beer tester? Like, does he just want to come home and sit in a cubicle?
Right, yeah. Just to go type something.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I hope someone will yell at me for a while.
Just tell me I'm not doing something right.
Yeah.
And say I need to work some overtime.
And that's, I don't think anybody wants to do what they do for a living when they get, I mean,
yeah.
I say that and I'm like, oh, but if I had stayed with music, like, I still, when I come home, I'll play the guitar for a couple hours. And I think, like, well, I would have loved to do that all the time, but probably not.
Right, yeah.
I'd probably just come home and go, good God, get that thing away from
me.
Right,
yeah. Well, I think you're right. I think it's that time where, one, you kind of get engulfed in, like, I guess you, there's a, with a lot of entertainment forms, there's, like, kind of that behind the curtain, you know, people don't see it. And then once they do, you kind of start to see the mystique remove itself a little bit, and you kind of know the things and ins and outs. And I think one thing, this may be told like a horrible example, but like I always liked professional wrestling, and I've recently, in like the last few years, started to like really get interested in like behind the scenes stuff, and like that's totally kind of removed me a little bit from like actual watching wrestling.
Oh really?
It's wrestling in general, but like seeing like the talks behind it and things like that have really like kind of, you look behind the curtain and you're like, oh okay. And obviously you've always known it was real.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna say that, but I mean obviously I know it's real last year when I found that out. But no, it's just like, I think with whether it's that, making movies, music, there's a behind the scenes type of side of it that, you know, people don't actually see, which may be a negative side, that you're just, whether it's the brunt work of booking or whatever, that just kind of takes the fun out of it. So yeah, going home and wanting to be like, oh yeah, I want to do this that I do full time anyways, not really on anybody's plate that they'd really care to do.
Right.
For me at least, I don't know. But so what other type of stuff when you're, you know, if you're not doing comedy that you enjoy? I know a lot of like, are you big into like pop culture stuff? Like just, because I know a bunch of useless pop culture nonsense. I don't know important stuff. Like,
yeah, I mean that's, you know, that was the impetus for Loser, the game show we do. But yeah, I mean that's, what did I mean, just during last night's show, I referenced the band Timbuk3 and the Jeff Healey band. You know, just, those random tidbits. I don't know if that's a hobby. It's just that's, you know, that's how my brain works for whatever reason. It, like, the cells are like, we need to keep this.
Yeah.
You know, well, what about car maintenance? Nope. No room.
Yeah, right. It's not important, okay?
Yeah.
Did you see that SNL bit just a bit ago? It was, like, in the new season. But they had like it was inside Pete Davidson's head.
I haven't watched Saturday Night Live since '94.
Yeah, I still watch it.
That's when I started drinking.
I DVR it, and then sometimes when I get bored, I'll just fast forward. But sometimes there's some pretty good stuff on there still. Like it, you know, everybody has their favorite years and cast and all that stuff. But anyway, Pete Davidson is on the show now, and yeah, real young comic and. He goes inside of his head, and he's like, I forget like the opening premise of the bit, but then he like, it goes inside his head, and there's like it's kind of like almost like heaven kind of thing, and like they're all sitting there, and like there's somebody like rolling, and he's like do we need this? And it was like some reference. So it was all this like '90s pop culture, all the characters or all the SNL guys were all dressed up. There was like Savage Garden and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was like some of the funniest stuff was all this random set '90s pop culture references that he had stuck in his head. And like that was the thing, was trying to figure out who gets kicked out so he can learn for the test and stuff.
Sure.
Like, so it was that's exactly.
Well, that's a bit I've been doing for about 4 years is basically that.
Right.
Is, you know, what your brain stores and what it lets go.
Yeah. That's what they were like. Yep. Nope. Get out of here.
Get out of here. Keep that stuff. So what's like a, and I don't want to say end game? Like, do you have like an ultimate goal of what you kind of want to get to, or is it just, you know, or is it stand up? You'll be able to do
something. I don't know, man. I just want to do something that gets me somewhat financially secure, and then I'll move to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and y'all never hear of me again. I mean, I don't, you know, at this point. I mean, I still like doing it, and you know, and I have all these other projects. I've got, you know, the game show, and I've got two shows, like one's a scripted series, one's a non-scripted series that I'm working on with a production company, and I've kind of been half-assed writing a novel for the last year. So it's just, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I got into this blind, and really when I got into it, I was just like, I just want to tour, because that's all I ever wanted with my bands. You know, we did it on such a small scale. I was like, you know, one day I just want to go, and I was like, oh, you can do that with comedy? Oh, and I don't have to deal with four other idiots? Right. All right, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you realize pretty quickly, or it took me probably longer than most, but no one is just a comic. Like, that doesn't happen. Everybody does something else, and that then raises the awareness of their comedy crowds, and then that's when you start making money touring. Right. It's rarely the inverse.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and, you know, some of these projects I don't want to go into because I'm not supposed to or whatever, but I would just like one of them to take off, you know, and then just go like, oh, this is, because they're all stuff I love doing.
Right.
So it's just eventually, and not that I don't love doing this, but it's just, I don't know. I'm just at a point where I'm just like, just one of these things needs to hit, and you know, then I'll have a little more money, and then I can tour to the places I want to. I don't have to tour every single week like I do now, and I'll move to North Carolina, and no one will have to deal with me again.
There you go.
You know,
that's a Mitch Hedberg joke I always think of, where he's like, you know, how they, when you're doing comedy, you're always doing something else too.
Yeah,
and he's like, you know, but it's like, it's never, oh, you cook? Can you farm?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's just because I know there's a lot of comedians who, you know, do stand-up but also really enjoy the writing side of it, and whether it's writing for – I listen to, like, Nerdist and, you know, Chris Hardwick, and they talk to him. Some of his buddies write for, like, At Midnight things, and just it seems like they have almost a more enthusiastic view on writing and doing writing for shows or projects and stuff compared to
– I mean, that's, you know, that's all I do is write. And that's all I've done since – that's the only way, with the exception of, like I said, the – brief bartending stints or the bookstore job I had. All I've ever been, since I was 14, all I've ever been paid to do is write. When I was, or I guess, yeah, when I was like 16, I guess, or 15, I had my first job, and it was on the sports page of the newspaper in my town. And then as I went through high school, guys would pay me to write poetry that they would give to their girlfriends and pretend it was them writing it. And, you know, then I got into this. And, I mean, even now it's like, I write the stand-up. And then, you know, with Loser, I have to write sketches. And the two other projects I'm not supposed to talk about, those are all writing-based. I'm now writing for the Riverfront Times. Mm. Like, yeah, that's, I mean, writing I love. That's the, you know, I think that that's the, I really enjoy performing. But I think there's a point where you just go, like, I'm exhausted. Like, I need a week or two off. Like, I'm just really exhausted. Whereas, like, writing is consistent. I was reading, I wish I could remember the name of the dude. He was in the band Cat Butt, and then he tour managed for a lot of people, but he wrote this novel, which I just read, which was really, really good. And his name's Dave something. And the novel, In Case We Die, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And it was really good, but I was reading this thing, and he was like, yeah, I write every day. I have to write something. I don't care if it's a haiku or a short story or whatever. I force myself to write every single day. And I was like, yeah, that's what I do. And sometimes you even realize you're, like, sometimes it does feel forced. You're like, I don't even have any ideas. Like, I just got to sit here and stare, you know? Yeah. And, but, you know, it is. And I think writing itself, at least for me, has become more and more challenging as technology has gotten more and more advanced, because it was like, it used to be, like, I remember when I started and I was living in Cincinnati, every morning, or, you know, around noon, I'd go to this coffee shop and I'd have my notebook and I'd have my cell phone, but it was like, there wasn't Facebook or 43 other things, and, you know, your cell phone didn't even get email, so it was like, if someone called you, they called you, but other than that, you just sat there and you wrote, and I'd take a book with me and a newspaper, and if I couldn't think of anything, I'd read until, you know. Yeah. And now it's like, you know, even if I don't take my computer, it's, I'm still sitting there, and my phone's just going off with 43 things that are really, oh, I got another email. Oh, it's a, you know, the Ohio Republican Party wants to remind me of some dumb thing, how they got my email, right. I don't even know, you know, and it's like, and I don't even live in that state, you know, so it's like, I think that's the hard thing, and it's something I'm even kind of dealing with a little bit now. It's like, how do you, because I can't, I mean, as with my job, I can't not bring my phone,
my phone.
Hello, hello, Southern twang that came
out
of nowhere.
So we're going to need you to step away and let Jeremy back to the microphone.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I can't not bring it because, you know, sometimes with work, it's like you get offered work, and then if you don't take it, they're going to email someone else in a half an hour.
Right.
And so I have to have it, but in the same sense, it's like, how do you, like, okay, it's here, but no. Don't look. Oh, it went off. Well, that's not an email. That's just some dumb Facebook notification. Don't see, you know, who posted a picture on your thing. You know, it's, I mean, I don't know. So that's, you know, that's kind of an internal fight, too. It's like, how do you really get yourself to be like, no, I'm writing?
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to get caught in that. As soon as you pick it up and you're like, oh, well, there's two notifications for this and an email. Yeah. And then you, like, one of the notifications references something and you're like, oh, I guess I got to look that up. And the next thing you know, you're like, well, I wrote for 2 hours, but I wrote for 5 minutes, really, and then I've just been dicking around on this thing.
I've been on Reddit for the last 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And, didn't know I'd look at it. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's almost like you can't fully disconnect, and like you said, like you do it like the old school way of like bringing a notepad and just saying, I'm turning everything off and writing. Because like you said, I try and do like a blog every day just for the sake of just writing every day. Like me and my buddy did a challenge of like, okay, let's write once a week for a year. And then after 2 years, like, I decided I'm going to write every day and just see, even if it's just crap. And like, that's kind of like you said, like, sometimes you just don't know what you're going to write about. Yeah. And, like, I'll just, write just total nonsense. But, like, sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to write something always gets either distracted. I mean, I have 2 kids now, so that doesn't help either. But, like, to get on the internet and go, oh, Facebook, oh, Twitter, oh, Reddit, oh, like, all these different means of just saying, hey, how about you look at this instead of doing something you're...
Right. You know? And I've found, for me, if I do it, if I write in the evening... It, you know, at least I can, like, I'm not really going to be getting a ton of emails that are work related at 8 o'clock at night. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, the notifications aren't pinging off as much. So it's easier for me to do it in the evening. But the problem is, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, I'm working at night.
Yeah.
I'm doing this. So, you know, you have to find a way in the day. And it's, you know, that's weird to say, like, that's a struggle, because you should just be able to go, don't look at your phone, dumb.
Yeah, right.
But, like, it's weird how we've become so, like, sadly tethered to, like, no, but the world is in this thing.
Yes.
Yeah, but the world doesn't give a shit about you.
Right.
Like, people, you know, 9/10 of the stuff you're looking at, people will wait.
Yeah. Do you think, I was thinking about this the other day, do you think there's going to be, like, a... not technological, like, fallout, but you think people, like, things are so convenient now that, like, we can just go right to this and this. Do you think, like, my first thought was, like, music, and we talked about, like, buying records and buying movies, like, where you can just have a movie download to your computer and, like, do you think we're ever going to get back to the point where, like, you know what, I'm so tired of just having things being right there. I want to go to, like...
I don't think we're going to get to that point.
I guess,
I don't know how old the two of y'all are, but you know, I, through my job, I interact with people that are, you know, decades, I'm not that old, but like at least a decade younger than me.
Yeah.
And like, that would seem ridiculous to them that there was, that's even a possibility that you could, it's like, no, it's just that, what do you mean it was never not there?
Right.
Like, as I told you that story about writing when I started doing comedy, I was like, I didn't even text message, you know, and I think to someone who's 22 or 24 now, they'd be like, that didn't exist.
Whatever.
Like that, like, you know, that they don't, there was a whole period where cell phones existed, but they were so pricey.
Yeah.
One, there was no such thing as text messages, and two, you only really used them if, like, my car broke.
Yeah. Right. Well, I remember, I probably hit that middle generation of, like, the 10 cents per text message, and, like, you'd have a limit, and then once you hit that, you're like, nobody fucking text messaged me because I'll get charged.
Yeah.
And your parents will be like, why'd you have $35 of charges of text messaging? And you're like, I'm sorry, you know, but like...
I think, so it's not, I don't think it's ever going to be people, I mean, individuals might go, like, I'm going back to that or whatever, but weirdos live out in the woods to
they
strange shit.
Off the radar.
But, like, I think what will propel something like that is the first time a major cloud crashes.
Right.
Like, so as someone who used to work at a bookstore, I was like, no Kindle. Like, I like having a book.
Yeah.
I like sitting with a book. I like supporting bookstores because I worked at one.
Yeah.
And I move almost once a year, whether or not it's within a city or to another city. I just get bored. And, you know, besides my dog, I have nothing to, you know, tether me to any city. So it's like, I'll just move there for a year.
Yeah.
And I finally, it was like, was the move to New York, because it was, you know, things were going to be much constrained. I had to get rid of a ton of my books. Like, I used to have just shelves of books, because when I worked at the bookstore, they were also super cheap as an employee. So you'd just be like, that looks interesting. I'll just buy it.
Right.
Kind of like what we were talking about you know, if my dream with records.
Yeah.
So, and so now all my, like, I just bought a new bookshelf for my apartment, and I was like, I don't even have that. I barely have any books. They're all on my Kindle now.
Yeah.
Now, if the Amazon server crashes and I lose all those books, I mean, that's just, then you might go like, I'm going to start buying the things that I'm, you know, that don't exist in nowhere land. And, you know, I mean, I think the same thing. I don't really ever buy many songs from iTunes, but I think if that server was to ever crash and like people lost like entire music libraries that they had invested, you know, thousands of dollars in, you'd be like, okay, I'm not, nope, not anymore.
Yeah.
And and you get to a point where you think just the way that computers work, eventually that has to happen. Like, as sad as that sounds, like, eventually that will have to happen because things break. And no matter how big of a company Apple is or Amazon is or wherever, someone's smarter than the person who set it up. There's an evil genius who's smarter that's just going to go ping, and we're all going to go, fuck.
Oh, my God, yeah. There was an article just recently. I think it was a guy from, I don't know if he's one of the guys who helped start Google. I don't remember who it was. But he was like, yeah, prepare for, like, a... basically a cloud like blackout, and he's like, you know, you should not like backing up your pictures, as good an idea as it sounds, you should have some kind of physical copy of that, because, and that made me think, I'm like, damn, like, I got a bunch of pictures of my kids or my wife and whatever on like an external hard drive or whatever, and I'm like, if that shit broke or if something in the cloud went down, I've lost it forever. And
I was putting up pictures in my new apartment, and I was like, wow, all my, if you just looked at my pictures that are up in my apartment, you would assume my life ended somewhere around 2003, because that's when I stopped having physical pictures.
Right.
You know, and you just go like, "Oh, that! Wow, you were like 40 pounds heavier and had a beard."
Right.
And then you look. Was that like last week? No, that was the last picture I ever printed out. It's with my grandparents, and that's it. You know.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm not anti-tech in any way, but I think. We're all someday going to, you know,
really
rue, like, ah, I don't have any memories or, you know, things. I don't, you know, we're just going to all end up running around going, well, at least my clothes don't live in the cloud.
Right, yeah. I think there's an episode of South Park where, like, the internet went out, and they're like, what do we do before the internet? TV! And so they run, like, a TV, and I guess TV's out, and they're like, what do we do before? The newspaper. I don't remember.
Well, even that, even TV, you know, I don't have cable because I don't really watch that much TV, but what I do watch, my parents have cable, and, I just use their password on different sites to watch the shows I want to watch, and you can watch them for free. And I was actually home talking to my father about it, and he said he knew someone else that did it. And he's like, you know, your mother and I don't watch that much TV. Like, maybe we should do that. And I go, oh, no, you can't. No,
you're the
provider.
Because,
if you do, then I'm out.
Yeah,
like, you have to keep paying for cable so I can watch cable.
You're the supplier, okay?
Yeah.
I'm your demand, but I'm getting
that's.
Free.
I mean, I was kidding, but I put something somewhere. Like, really all that needs to happen in this world is just one person has to have cable and that person has to have HBO in their package.
Right.
And then all of
it
us can watch
it.
Tack. I mean, this is obviously not how it would work, but they tack a little sign to all the telephone poles in the world going, here's my codes.
Here you go. Go on, log in, enjoy Game of Thrones, baby.
Yeah.
And then somebody will stream it and, like, the whole idea of, like, preventing people from seeing stuff is just good luck. I don't know how anybody, the FCC or whatever, wants to try and even begin to think about that, but we'll get our free stuff.
Yeah.
No. It's just the way to go, but... we'll kind of wrap up here. I know, so people come in here about 25 minutes at 7:30 start seating. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So
ish.
Well, ish. Yeah. So I mean, we could just sit up here for like next 4 hours.
This could be my show tonight.
What's up,
we
guys?
Just do this.
Yeah. This is my laptop. Check
or actually, you know what? You guys, that's what we should do. So you should interview. You guys should just stay up here, and then you should interview the host, and you should interview the feature.
Yeah.
And then when it's my time, you just play what we already
did.
All
right. I'll just
sit here. Yeah. I've actually been experimenting with this idea that I want to try, and I don't know quite how to do it, but I want to come up on stage and put in my own CD, and I want to lip sync to my CD.
Oops.
and then slow one kind of see how long it takes before anybody realizes, and if they don't, just slowly start moving my mouth in a different fashion and see how long it takes before the crowd's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. You got to plant like three or four people here who are in with it and they're like, no, no, you're fine. Don't just...
Oh, no, because I actually want to watch everyone go like, did you? Huh? Like, that's the other thing I've been doing, and it's, I don't know if it's boredom or whatever, and I talked about this in another interview earlier this week. I wanted, like, stand-up is like, it doesn't change. I mean, it doesn't, there's no... It's at the end of the day, it's just some idiot talking into a microphone and knowing where to pause. Yeah. And that's like, I mean, there's a bigger skill set to it. I'm not trying to demean it, but it's like no one's done anything super weird with it. Like the term alternative comedy, I get where it started. Like, and I'm, you know, I realized like when Brian was doing it or Patton was doing it, what they were doing was different than those 80s comics I had mentioned. But like now that term doesn't even, everything is like, alternative comedy. No, you just have a beard. Yeah. There's not, and it all looks the same. It all, and that's, it's like what you're, the beard and the fucking disheveled look, that's just the sport coat and t-shirt of the 80s. You're doing the same thing. So like, no one's really done it, and it's probably too weird, and it's not going to work, but like, so I'm recording the CD next week, and I'm just thinking of like, what weird shit could I do? Like, what if I recorded the CD and then took out the laugh track?
Right.
Like, and I just released the CD with no laughs on it.
Yeah.
Or... what if I did it and in places of laughs, I just put goats making that goat noise? You know what I mean? Just like any weird, like, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to do it this week, but I've been doing this sometimes lately where I bring my guitar up on stage and I don't play it. And I just go like, if anybody in the crowd wants to play guitar, you can come up and play guitar. And when you play guitar, I will sing my jokes. And I've done it. It works pretty well. I mean, because that is like, to me, it's fun because like, I don't know what the person's going to play. I never know the person, so it's like, and then they play whatever, and then I have to create a melody and then do the melody with my, like, it's just anymore, and that's where that idea of playing the CD, and it's just like, what else can we do? And I mean, I think Andy Kaufman did that, but no one's really done it since, and if you do anything weird, people are like, oh, that's like Andy Kaufman.
Right,
no, you're just doing, you know, yes, if you took the crowd out for Milk and Cookies, that is doing Andy Kaufman. If you just came up on stage and slept, which is what he did once, yes, that's Andy. But just to say like, well, no one can do anything weird with the medium anymore. It's like, no, that's not accurate.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think when people see new stuff, they don't want to buy into it until like 30 years after, like, man, remember he was the one who did that, and then you're like gone, and you're like, oh, it's...
And that's the thing, and that's even when I talk about the CD, I'm honestly, CD, it's not coming out on CD. I'm going to release a vinyl version and a digital version, but my kind of what I'm thinking is like, kind of what you said, making two. Like, okay, you want the normal, it sounds like every other stand-up CD, here you go, and that's the one you give to, you know, Sirius or whatever. And then just put out a second version, which is that it's just weird.
Yeah.
It's, you know, goat noises and no laughs and someone playing guitar weirdly and, you know, just different spoken word pieces weaved in, you know, and just see, like, does anyone want this? Am I the only one that would get something like that and go, like, whoa, this guy did weird? Because it's still, at the end of the day, it's still jokes.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, you go back to, like, Sonic Youth, and you go like, those were still songs, but they had like these guitars and these crazy tunings, they were making all these weird noises, and like it was really interesting, but at the base of it, it's still songs,
right?
You know, and so it's kind of like, what can you do with jokes? And that's because I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm either bored or past the point of giving a fuck. I don't know which one it is anymore, but it's one of the two, and now it's kind of like, all right, I got into this not liking it.
Yeah.
And now I'm here. Will anyone go with me if I do this weird shit, or is everybody just going to go like, what?
Yeah.
You know, because there's also something, it's just being interesting for interesting's sake, which I think is just annoying when people do that. Like, oh, you're just trying to do a thing, you need to be weird, but it's not. You know, it's the same when a comic is like super offensive and they're like, whoa, I guess you guys can't help. You knew they couldn't handle it. That's why you said it, because there's not a joke. You were trying to offend them and now you're acting like an asshole. Oh my God, you got offended. Because I pointed at that guy and said, hey, I fucked your mom last night. Well, that's not a joke.
Right.
Yeah, of course he's offended.
Yeah.
If I walked up to you and punched you in the face and then you got angry, I'd be like, oh, someone can't take a punch in the face, huh?
Oh, I guess you're a big pussy, bro.
Yeah,
huh?
So
you punched me in the face, man.
Yeah, so, you know. But that's in my weird little whatever.
I was thinking, get topical. There's there's a similar kind of argument right now with that Blurred Lines, that Robin Thicke mm-hmm. song. Like, a lot of people are, like, glad that they got, like, sued or whatever. Like, they get the court.
Yeah.
But the same sense, like, there's the other side of the argument that people are saying, like, well, now it's going to ruin anybody from having influences. Like, you know, you're going to – because it's –
Well, there's a couple things on that, and I've read a lot on that. Yeah. One, I don't completely buy the argument that you're reading a lot of places like this is going to ruin music and everyone in the world owes Chuck Berry a check or you know what. Although I think everyone in the world probably does owe Chuck Berry a check, but that's a different argument altogether. I don't. Jason Isbell tweeted something really interesting that, like, don't believe the bloggers. This is not bad for music. There's still a lot of horribly generic music out there for you to love.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think that really, and this is just my understanding of the case, that has nothing to do with music. That has to do with being an idiot.
Yeah.
And the idiot part is, the way I understand it, the lawyers for, Robin Thicke's the kid, right? Alan Thicke is the dad. The lawyers for Robin Thicke and Pharrell preemptively filed this thing saying they didn't infringe on the copyright, even though Marvin Gaye's estate hadn't said they did. So they filed that lawsuit. Well, then now the Gaye family has to countersue.
Yeah.
And then they lost. It's like if I came to your house and was like, hey, Shane, I bought this new lawnmower, and I have a feeling you're going to think it looks a lot like your lawnmower. Like, it's got a little piece of paint where yours did and everything. But, dude, I swear it's my lawnmower. Yeah. So if you just sign this thing saying it's not your lawnmower, and then you go out to your garage and go, hey, man, where the fuck's my lawnmower? And then you call the cops, and then I get in trouble for stealing your lawnmower. I'm an idiot for coming over and asking you to sign. And, I mean, I think that's what's getting lost in all of it. But it's what I was saying earlier. It's like music writing, just writing in general, and maybe this is, you know, is because I read too much or because I went to J school or whatever it is, but it's like so many of these Marvin Gaye articles I read, the person said, now I'm not really familiar with Marvin Gaye's music, or I don't really know this. Why the fuck are you writing it then? Like, and that you see it with everything. There was this article at BuzzFeed or whatever, one of those, that was like, St. Louis food sucks. And it totally does, by the way. But, like, the article was written, basically they used that premise to just rip St. Louis. But in every line they kept going like, well, I've never been to St. Louis, but here's what else sucks about that. If you don't know what you're talking about, why are you writing about it?
Right.
And it's just, like, but that's become everything now. It's like even, and I do not want to get into the actual topic I'm about to reference, but even if you get into the Ferguson coverage, so much of it is not about what's going on. It's about reporters telling you what's happening to them.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. I should never be in a news story. I should, you're just there. You're not an existing thing.
Right.
But that's all anything has become is like, well, I'm a guy and I have an opinion and I'm going to swear and use words like butthurt, so doesn't this seem like I know what I'm talking about? No, you sound like a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
But the problem is, now I sound like an old man, generationally, that's become accepted as like commentary. It's not. Commentary should only be written from the perspective of someone who really knows what they're talking about. And it never is. And so with that Blurred Lines thing, I read three articles where it was like, this is going to ruin music. You're kind of showing a lack of understanding of the case, one. And two, it's like, it's not like this hasn't happened. It's not like this didn't just happen with Sam Smith or whoever that dude is.
Yeah.
And I mean, back when I was in high school, that Rolling Stones song came out, and someone was like, hey, that sounds just like that Katie Lang song. Most musicians just go like, all right, here, man, what if I gave you a co-write?
Yeah.
And then you give them the co-write, and then everybody's cool, and you move on. I don't have anything against Robin Thicke, because I don't know him. I don't care either way. I was just, it doesn't ruin music. It doesn't. There's only 13 notes in total, and generally 7 in a major scale.
Right.
You can only do so much.
Right.
I mean, I wrote a song in college with my band in college where it sounded one way, and I was really drunk one of our shows, and I couldn't get the rhythm right, and I just kept like trying and trying and trying, and then I realized, oh shit, this is the guitar part to Back on the Chain Gang by the Pretenders if you play it at a different speed. But, you know, the melody was different. And I mean, there are ways to delineate between this just to say, like, oh, well, that's the end of music. That, yeah. You're dumb. Uh-huh. And you don't understand what you're talking about. And if when you put in the article you don't understand what you're talking about, some editors should go, hey, you're not writing this now. Yeah. You just admitted you don't know what
Get
you're talking
here.
About.
Yeah.
Sorry, I now have long... No, in the last two questions, we've gotten on things that I'm actually fired up about. So
yeah. We'll save it for the next one. We'll just start talking about, like,
right.
News. And all
what else do you want to yell about, yeah. Jeremy?
Talk about... No. Well, hey, man, we appreciate you coming on.
No, thanks for having me, man. It's
awesome
fun.
For, again, being up on stage here and getting to do it here. It's nice.
So, yeah, so two shows Friday night. Three shows.
Saturday, one Sunday, one Monday.
All right, so you got all weekend, come out to a show, and then you got, what you said, last weekend of the...
Loser will Wednesday? Be the last Wednesday of every month, yes, at the Heavy Anchor. This month is our 80s New Wave show, and then actually next month, the May show, this is kind of a big one, it's going to be free. It's going to be a best of because we're taping. If anybody would like to come, that show is free. We're actually, if you haven't been to the, you've been to the Heavy Anchor, we're going to actually open that garage door and let people go all the way to the back of the bar. Okay. And like I said, it's going to kind of be a best of show. So that's that's an important one. We're going to have a lighting crew and everything.
Oh, awesome.
I was on episode one.
That's right, you were.
I was a contestant.
That's right, you were.
Yeah, that was fun, man. I love those loser shows. It was a good time. So yeah, come out if you want to have fun. So. And then come out to the Funny Bone and laugh.
Yup.
All right, man. Jeremy, thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Episode
appreciate it.
54. That's a wrap.
Bye.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock,